Well, welcome to the BYU Management Society Moral and Ethical Leadership Podcast, hosted by the BYU Management Society. I'm Dave Austin.
And I'm Kurt Frankum.
And part of the mission of the BYU Management Society Salt Lake Chapter is to provide scholarships to service-oriented high school seniors. And each year, approximately 50 deserving students are awarded scholarships to local colleges and trade schools. If your family or business would like to join in providing scholarships to these future leaders by sponsoring a podcast, please contact us at byupodcast.slc@gmail.com, and we'd love to contact you. And each time we do one of these interviews, I am so excited for the opportunity. I feel like I learn more than anybody else by the virtue of the chance to listen to our amazing guests. And today we have the incredible opportunity to meet with Nick Greer. Nick, welcome and thank you.
Thanks for having me here. This is great.
Oh, we're so grateful to have you with us. And Nick, we just heard an amazing luncheon from you, and I want to talk a little bit about that. But first, would you mind telling us about yourself and what you're passionate about?
Well, listen, seven kids, an incredible, most precious, most beautiful, sweetest wife ever, and one grandchild. That is me right there.
And you know, just being present in your presentation down there, you had some slides, a few slide decks, and you know, you just sort of followed what you know, some would say your gut was telling you, but you sort of took it in a different direction. Anything to say to that?
Yeah, you know, it was interesting. You know, teaching at school, teaching at BYU for 6 years, I'd always try to go in to make sure you follow the spirit and follow, you know, that intuition that you would have, and not knowing exactly what you're going to teach. And, you know, speaking in front of crowds and groups, and today for some reason was difficult. I don't know why. I'm thinking, why is this going to be so difficult? And something just kept stopping me. And so there were several presentations created, thoughts, ideas. I was going down different paths. And even wrote out an entire talk, which is odd for something like that. I mean, that's not my style in a situation like this, but felt like, okay, write it out just in case. Well, the just in case happened about 10 seconds before the end of the intro. I thought, oh, shoot, I actually got to give this talk now. Now everyone's going to think they're at church. Are you kidding me? They're all going to fall asleep, and they're going to think, why is this kid up there? So that's kind of what transpired, which was an incredible experience, but I was so grateful for it.
Awesome.
One of the things I really appreciate about what you talked about was transformational versus transactional. Can you talk a little bit about what that means to you?
Yeah, no, for sure. And all props to Kurt, you know, on this. I mean, from a year and a half ago on his podcast, which was transformational, literally, for me. And I was so grateful to actually finally be able to define what I've been feeling and seeing and sensing and wanting, but actually putting two words behind it as far as transformational and transactional. So thank you, Kurt, for
yeah,
that.
Yeah, sure.
That was pretty cool.
Yeah, we'll link to that that episode.
Yeah, please do. Yeah. Please do. Let's get a little more likes on that one, right? And some more listeners. But, you know, it's interesting when you think about transformational, it's like intentional. When you're sitting with someone, what is your intent? Is it real? Because they can feel it. It's that intangible that you can't necessarily train on. But when you're with someone and you're having those relationships, whether it's in a large crowd, small crowd, one-on-one, or even by yourself when you're reflecting upon things that you may be studying or trying to learn, is it transformational for you at that moment? Is it actually transforming you or changing you? Is it improving you? Is it creating that, I guess you would say, that change that's needed to become a little bit better today? And are you doing that in return for someone else when you're with them at that moment? Transactional, it's very much me-centered. What's in it for me? I had a junior high student council leader, and I ran for office, one for student body president. I'm sure barely won. But he came to me. He's like, Nick, here you go, WIIFM. Learn it over the summer. I go, Mr. Little, tell me, what in the world do you mean by that? He goes, you'll learn it. Summer comes to the end. He goes, did you learn it? I go, I still don't know what WIFM means. He goes, what's in it for me? And I learned at an early age at that point, okay, if I'm always worried about me and what's in it for me, it becomes very transactional, right? To use your word, that was so powerful. And that moment I realized, and I'm learning more and more, and I need to learn a lot more. Is it a transaction? Is it about me? Is it about my gain? Or is this about others and how you can lift others and transform others? And then in return, of course, transform yourself.
Hmm. And what does that look like around the built corporate office? I mean, day to day, how do you make sure that you stay in that transformational realm rather than, because you can default to sort of that transactional?
Yeah, and you absolutely default to transaction because that's a natural human tendency, right? Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of times it's based upon fear. And so fear takes you to transactional mindset, and fear takes you to doing things out of the norm, or what is, you know, a social norm that exists out there. And you just naturally, human tendency, fall into that. But for us at Built, I would say, and we're still learning this, and by far, I mean, we're far away from where we want to be and where I myself as a leader want to be, but it's about the details, and the details matter because it's about the experience, and the experience is everything, right? And experience is about, okay, what is someone feeling emotionally, and is there an emotional connection that they feel? And so when a team member walks in, when a client walks in, a vendor, a partner, whoever it may be, or when they interact with your brand, what is their emotional experience? And if you have good intent, and if you're trying to transform someone, to use those words again, then wow, that connection is powerful. And what do? Emotionally now, they're part of something. They're part of something. They want to be part of that tribe. They want to be part of making a difference. They want to be part of a certain flavor club or whatever it is. And then they start fighting for this flavor and that flavor and this bar and that bar. And wow, you're emotionally connected. That's transformational.
Yeah.
NIL, name, image, likeness. When it first came out, I know that there was a lot of people concerned about what this was going to do to college sports. Was it going to turn it into pro sports, right? And you saw the you know, quarterback that's making $1 million, et cetera, et cetera. And it really took the world by storm when Built and you and BYU decided to take this a completely different direction. And I'm friends with David Almodova, who said that he appreciates the pureness of the way that you looked at that and how that might be able to help walk-ons at BYU. Can you talk about that for maybe those who don't know and how that came about?
Well, first off, David is an incredible soul. I love David and love everyone down there at BYU. I mean, really how it came about is because of others, because of their, I guess, the spirit of which they approach things. And you look at the team, you look at Coach, and you look at Kalani, what he's done and the culture that he's created. It's all about that culture, and it's a culture of love, of oneness, of unity. And when there's unity, there's equality. When there's equality, there's this fact that we're rooting and pushing and helping my brother right next to me every step of the way. And there's not this, I guess, separation based upon scholarship, non-scholarship, walk-on, not walk-on, whatever it may be. So that's really where it started. We just end up being a variable in a very large equation that just so happened to maybe be part of the last variable of that NIL equation that helped, or at least part of that equation that helped maybe create a little bit of that emotional connection. And I think at the end of the day, you think about this, and going back to what I just said, why I believe people connected to that. You look at the boys when they cheered for each other. They loved that each other, they were winning, that others were winning. That, my friend, was incredible. It wasn't about them winning. Again, going back to transformation, it was about the others winning. It was the fact that, you know what, my brother is winning and I love it. How does he help? And how does he actually, not help, but how does he actually win even more? And what I was going to say was, a lot of those boys went to Coach afterwards, in fact, and said, Coach, I want my money as a scholarship player that I'm getting to go to those other players. I mean, are you kidding me? Tell me what other program in the United States probably would do that. And it just shows you the character of these boys. And you see even right now, for BYU's sake, the recruiting that's taking place on all sorts of sports. Yeah. It's because there's a feel of unity there and love, and there's this momentum. It's starting to pay off, and it's incredibly beautiful, and I love it.
Yeah. And I'm just curious, I mean, obviously with this NIL approach and strategy, a lot of positive, you know, brand equity came for Built, right? And I don't think you sat in a room and thought, how can we get some awesome marketing through this? But, like, talk to us about marketing in 2021, because, you know, it doesn't matter what podcast I listen to or radio program, it seems like it comes up, you know, Built Bar is one of the sponsors there. But how can other professionals learn from branding as far as what Built does?
Yeah, I mean, really, you think a lot of times you're actually selling a product. People don't buy product, they buy brand. Hmm. And it may sound a little odd. You're like, no, I buy products. Well, no, why do you buy those products? Even down to, like, let's just say a Western Family Rice-A-Roni or rice or whatever it may be. That's two brands in one right there. But why do you buy it? Well, you buy it because of cost. It's the brand and associate cost. And I have a budget, that I need to follow. And so therefore that brand, I'm buying that brand and it gives me nourishment. So for me, I look at it as a business, if you're building any type of business, what is your brand? And that brand could be a service, it could be a product, it could be tech, it could be software, it could be whatever, right? But at the end of the day, you're selling the brand and you're actually associated or part of that brand. So how can you actually build up to what beginning of your statement was with that brand equity?
Yeah.
How do you build up that brand equity, that perception of outsiders to say, I trust that brand. I like that brand. That brand is fun. That brand is exciting. That brand is colorful. That brand actually gives back. That brand, whatever they associate with, again, it's emotional ties to a brand, right? Mm-hmm. And you feel a sense of belonging. And I don't know if we can say this on a BYU podcast, but I'm going to say it. So Red Bull. Red Bull is incredible. They're incredible marketers. Why? They create a sense of belonging. And you look where they actually market and where they brand the most, it's very extreme sports. And you want to be part of that extremeness. You want to be part of that like high intensity. I'm going to be part of that clan, part of that tribe. And so you have this sense of belonging. It's a brand. It's an emotional attachment. And that's why you reach for that Red Bull. I don't drink them, but I will say, but you reach for it because you have that connection. I love Nikes. I have an emotional connection to Nikes.
Yeah.
It just so happens that it's like I buy a lot of my Nikes because I feel that's part of my brand and I have this sense of belonging to that brand.
Yeah, and it's been interesting to see that shift in my own mind where big BYU fan, season ticket holder, now when I'm at the supermarket or shopping for a bar to have in my office on hand, it's like I feel like as I'm buying that, I'm helping BYU score touchdowns.
and we are
like,
winning, which is great.
Yeah, yeah, right.
It is.
So
yeah, it helps the cause,
it just feels like a BYU brand now. I mean, in my mind, anyways, and that's cool. Yeah, it's my tribe.
I belong.
That's right.
I belong. It's great. That's so great.
Let's go back to your talk. Last question. I loved what you said. I wrote down the three things you talked about: being unified, being holy, and then also caring for the poor and needy. Can you talk to us about caring for the poor and needy? I could tell you got emotional when you were asked that question around why that's important and what you do to help care for the poor and needy and what all of us can do.
I don't do enough and I want to do a lot more. And, when I was 11 years old, almost 12, we lost everything. And, it was an incredible, most beautiful experience for our family. And I say lost, meaning going down to the Bishop's storehouse. And I remember even working down there once. My dad and I made ketchup. I swore I would never eat ketchup again. I'm like, there's so much sugar in this ketchup. And next thing you know, we went to Sonic and I ordered fries and I got ketchup. And so it lasted about 20 minutes of not eating ketchup. But it was an incredible time that had a lasting impression on myself. But I see what happens when a family or families, when they dropped off, I believe it was 2 50-pound bags of potatoes at our front door. They knocked, they left, ran away. We opened the door and there was 100 pounds of potatoes. I remember my mom storing those potatoes in every cupboard, underneath the sink, everywhere. I swear every cupboard you were opening up, you were finding potatoes. To this day, I have a hard time eating a baked potato. Like it's like difficult for me, but it resonates with me. And you talk about the poor and the needy. I mean, we didn't have a lot, but it is an incredible opportunity to be able to go out and feed the poor and the needy. You know, you look in the scriptures, that is part of the great cause of Zion, of gathering Israel, is helping the poor and needy. And that's what we have been called to do as saints, as members of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, is to go out, gather Israel, and help those in need, poor and needy in spirit and poor and needy physically. How do we go do that? And that is where it becomes empowering. You realize, wow, like I am so small compared to this great world, this great universe that exists. And if I can make a very small impact to do it, at least I'll try doing my part.
Well, I just wanted to say thank you, Nick. We are so appreciative for you, for the time that you spent to come up here to be with us, for all you taught us, for changing your talk. I was very touched by it, and thank you for your service.
Thank you. Thank you for the opportunity. What a blessing. Thank you.
And thank you to all of our listeners. We'll be back again next week with another episode of our Moral and Ethical Leadership Podcast. Have a great week.